The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Today, we're talking to the BC Liberals candidate for the Vancouver Mount Pleasant riding, George Vasles. Thank you so much, George, for joining us here on The Pulse on CFRO.
David, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the time that you've given me.
Well, you're welcome. And it is the home stretch. The election is, of course, next Saturday, and we have until Wednesday to finish advance voting, so people, if want to avoid the lineups, can do that. First of all, just tell us a little bit about how you're feeling coming into the final week of the campaign.
You know, I always tell people ask me the same question. I've always said, look, you know, you don't enter anything to lose. You enter everything to win, right? So right now, like you said, it's a home stretch. It's exciting, right? Because you know that you only have 5 or 6 days left. You want to go full court press as much as you possibly can to get the message out, to introduce yourself to whoever you haven't met yet. There is that drive to finish strong, and that's what you really want to do as much as you possibly can.
Tell us a little bit about who you are. Can you give us your like 1 minute elevator pitch? Who is George Vasles?
George Vasles is a serial volunteer who has done everything in his possibly can in 25 years of fundraising and charitable work to change the community he's always been involved in. I moved here 6 years ago from Montreal. My parents moved to Canada from Greece in the 50s, and they left a war-torn Greece after World War II. Seeing starvation and poverty. And in 10 years, my dad, of course, here's the joke, we're Greek, so he opened his restaurant. That's what we do. And for the 30 years that he had the restaurant, he constantly taught us to give back. We had the restaurant. I'm not sure if you know Montreal very well, but Hochelaga Maisonneuve is the neighborhood that I lived in for the first 10 years of my life. And that's where the restaurant was for 30 years. It was the poorest neighborhood in Canada for probably 5 straight years. So he constantly was being reached out to by soup kitchens, by church groups, to help them and to help feed the people in the area. And, you know, you're impacted by that, right? You see that your dad's doing, you're working and you're helping and you're serving food to the individuals who don't have, who need a little bit of a bump up or a boost to get out of where they are right now. And that has left an imprint with me. And I've constantly done as much as I possibly can to give back to society, no matter where I am, whether Montreal or here in Vancouver for the past 6 years.
Now, you mentioned that in Montreal, you were in a very low income neighborhood. And that is one for sure, a very working class, largely immigrant neighborhood there. In your riding here, Mount Pleasant, it is two things that are pretty notable. One is that we have the poorest urban postal code in Canada, the downtown east side. The second is that this has been an NDP riding pretty much stalwart through even the dark days after the 90s NDP failures. How do you approach that? Because it obviously is not a likely win and has not at least historically been one.
It's going to be a win, David. You know, a lot of it is you approach it like you do any other challenge, right? Because at the end of the day, like I said, if you're not all in, then don't do something. A lot of what I've been doing is going to the areas of the affected individuals. I've spent a lot of time in Strathcona and I listen. I sit down at Union Market and I've spoken to stakeholders and neighborhoods and citizens who live there and just listen. And I'm not going to lie to you, people are frustrated. People are very upset as to the state of their neighborhood. And I have to say, let me start by saying that the people who live in the Strathcona area impressed me like no other citizens. And let me tell you why. They're like, hey, we don't want to move the individuals who are living in the park to another neighborhood because we know we're just passing the buck to another neighbor. We understand by living in this area, there's a certain element of people who are homeless, who are in need. So we're okay with helping them. However, we're overburdened. And that's their share of burden is higher than any other neighborhood in Vancouver. So a lot of time what I do is I'm listening to them. I'm taking account of what their concerns are. And I never overpromise anything, but I do promise that I understand what they're going through. And I will work hard to make sure that I will, as their MLA, remove all obstacles and be their champion. I believe that as an elected official, they're my boss. If I want to keep this job, I have to make sure that they're happy or the majority of people are happy in terms of what I'm doing. So I have to deliver. The onus is on me I have to make sure that I listen carefully. I involve stakeholders. I bring people to the table that have to be brought to the table and should be brought to the table and perhaps haven't been listened to. And the biggest complaint you're hearing from the people in Strathcona specifically is that their voices are not heard. Be it on a municipal level, on a provincial level, they feel that they are just speaking to the wind and absolutely no one's listening to them. So, you know, a lot of what I've done in that area is just listening to people walking the streets, you know, and empathizing with what they're going through.
Have you been to the tent city yourself or talked to folks there?
Yes. Yes, I have. I was there on the second day of the campaign. We went there with Andrew Wilkinson, and there was a gentleman who met us there and gave us a tour. His name is Adam. He lives in the Strathcona. He gave us his day-to-day how anything, he told us, anything that's not locked down or nailed down in their backyard gets stolen. And I met with the Children of Strathcona Committee, and they walked me around the schools in the area who for the first time ever are putting up fencing because individuals from the tent city were using their schoolyard for a bathroom and to shoot up. So, you know, you walk around the area. The police suggested that we don't go too deep into the park, so we stayed on the periphery. So, but, you know, we did walk the neighborhood extensively.
We've had guests on our show before from Strathcona Residents Association, as well as from the tent city itself and the surrounding businesses and that sort. And obviously, this is all spilled over with that protest a few weeks ago of people demanding that the tent city be removed, that there be enforcement of the existing laws. Obviously, this is an older problem than just this last couple years, but what do you think is the actual cause of this tent city and the others that have honestly sprouted up across Canada and especially across BC? What's the root cause, do you think?
I don't think there's one root cause. I think there's multiple root causes. If you go in there, you speak to individuals, you speak to healthcare providers, there's a mental health issue, right? There's a drug addiction issue. There's an unemployment issue. And there's a housing issue. I think those are the top four issues as to why this tent city has existed or has ballooned. I believe the individuals of the committee were also telling me that there was a legal case that recently passed that all parks in Vancouver, anybody who's living in a tent has to pack up their tent by 7 a.m. and move on, except for Strathcona. So people who don't want to move on now are tenting up in Strathcona. So that's unfortunate for the neighborhood. But I think if you look at those four issues, the homelessness, employment, mental health, and drug addiction, you have to tackle each of them head on in a proactive manner. Right now, we're behind the eight ball. And I think for the past 3 years, everyone, I'm not just using this as for political fodder, but everyone in the neighborhood is telling us how it's gotten worse in the past 3 years. Sure, COVID has exacerbated the situation, but it wasn't much better for 2.5 years before that. So, you know, if you look at those four issues and you attack those four issues in a proactive way by providing services, by making sure that people are there to care for the individuals, there's so much that you can do in a proactive measure for those four issues. I think that will help. And I think the biggest one is economy, right? When people have a job, when they're able to get housing, they're in a much better place than living on a tent in a park.
I wanted to ask you more about this because obviously this is the hot button issue in the riding. I would say it's spilling over into tensions in the streets. We've had news stories about people feeling harassed in their neighborhood. We've also heard stories about homeless people feeling the same. Obviously, this can't continue as it has. But I'm wondering, what is it about the NDP's policies you think are a failure? Because I know that, you know, we've been asking everyone what their position is, for instance, on harm reduction services. What is your position on that?
What policies? I mean, to be honest, what I've seen the most is that they're not present. And everyone who's talking to me, that they're having a hard time connecting to their MLA. They're having a hard time getting reaction or getting solutions. And again, I don't want to disparage anyone, but a lot of times what these residents are telling me is that when they reach out to the elected officials, they're constantly being told, well, it's not my role. It's not my job. That's not my portfolio. I can't handle that. So they're constantly being passed down the buck and no one wants to address it. I feel that it's become this, and I hate to use this word, but it's become this black hole of a topic that nobody really wants to go and address and fix. And when you speak to the residents, it's really unfortunate because that's their feeling. And that's how
Why
they're
not?
Feeling right now.
Why do you think they're not? What causes the black hole, you think?
Great question, David. You know, it could just be that, again, without having the full knowledge, obviously I'm running for political office, right? So anything I say might be seen as, hey, I'm overpromising. But the reality is it could just be that there might be some decisive actions that have to take place that nobody wants to take place, that nobody wants to do. So could there, maybe there's an enforcement issue that, you know, we need to have more police in the area and to enforce what has to happen, enforce the rules. The same rules have to apply to the park that they apply to citizens on the street that live in homes. So, you know, I think I believe individuals are taking their time to ensure that they have a proper solution that satisfies everyone. But I think whenever we try to make everyone happy, unfortunately, what we succeed in is making everyone unhappy. So I believe in the short is that people don't want to make a tough decision to address what has to get addressed.
Do you think that they should actually do what they did in Oppenheimer Park, which was close the park off and remove the campers?
I think Oppenheimer Park is a great example of what not to do, in the sense that all you did was pass the buck to another park. And I walked through Oppenheimer Park with the committee. And if you look at it, it's fenced off. It's going to cost probably $1 million to fix that park and to radiate it and to clean it up. I think what has to get done is that you have to approach everything in a proactive way, whether it's mental health, whether it's drug addiction, to ensure that the individuals are there, have the care that they need to get out of the situation that they're in. So do we need to have more clinics, institutions that will help people with mental care? Absolutely. Do we need to have more drug addiction care? Absolutely. I think the more people that are in systems that will allow you to come off of a dependency of an illegal drug, it'll help you. I've had people ask me if perhaps there needs to be safe houses for drug use. That could be a solution as well. I know that in Europe, I believe it was in a city in Switzerland, they've legalized that, and it's actually taken a lot of the stigma off of the streets, and you don't have needles all over the place. So there are things that can be done. However, it needs the stakeholders to be engaged, involved, and looking to move any solution from the research and education into implementation and mobilization.
I know that your party platform has talked a lot about the needs for more options on drug treatment, including what your leader, Andrew Wilkinson, said was evidence-based or medical-based approach to seeing what's effective. What's your personal position on harm reduction, the philosophy of things like safe injection sites or supervised consumption sites or that kind of thing?
You know, like I said, you know, I think it's worked in other places around the world. And if it's worked in other places, and if you have key stakeholders that agree to it, then it should happen here as well. You know, you obviously have to work with the federal government to make sure that everything is legal and everyone's is happy with it or okay with it. But absolutely, if it's working in other areas in the world, why wouldn't you use that and leverage that experience and bring it here as well?
What do you say to people who say that the BC Liberals are not sincere in supporting harm reduction when in fact that they have challenged it at different points and are right now opposing the Yale Town safe injection site in another writing?
I don't know about the Yale Town injection site. I just know what's happening in Strathcona. And the reality is that, you know, when people ask me, hey, you know, back in the day, Christy Clark did X, Y, Z, I always say, hey, listen, you know, I never put the sins of the father onto the child. I can only speak to what we're talking about right now. And there's an epidemic going on right now, not only for COVID, but also what's happening at Strathcona Park and on the east side. So what needs to do in terms of solution, we have to focus on what will work there.
Let's talk about housing. I know that one of the things that the so-called sins of the father issue that comes up often is the BC Liberals' time in government and the rampant rise of speculation that has kind of drove up housing prices. What needs to happen on housing to get people to be able to afford to live in this riding and not have to spend so much of their paycheck on the rent?
And you're talking to somebody also who lives in a 900 square foot condo, right? And who understands the need for green spaces and understand the needs of having more space for yourself at an affordable rate. I think this pandemic has shown us that the ability to have a house that you're comfortable in, that you don't feel locked into, how important that is. I think a lot of what it comes down to is making sure that we have stakeholders that can look at, for example, provincial lands that can be developed into affordable housing to be able to provide options to our individuals and to our citizens to afford to live. And I think there are lots of lands out there that are provincially owned that can be developed, whether it's a public-private partnership or even just going to tender for developers to be able to develop those lands. And again, those are ideas that I have that we can look at. There is, in terms of the costs, where you have individuals who own businesses, for example, all over Mount Pleasant, who are being taxed for the space that is not being used, the air above their business, for example, that is squeezing them out. I'm not in favor of that. I think that needs to get changed significantly, because you're really forcing gentrification of neighborhoods. But what I feel needs to be done is to look at the options of the land that the province does own and see what we can do to develop property there that is more affordable housing for everyone.
So that's a position that is also in the NDP platform, as is support for harm reduction. I'm wondering, what makes you different? Why would people vote for you if the policies are relatively similar?
Again, great question, David. I think my question to anyone who asks that question, I always ask the question back, is, well, are you better off now than you were 3 years ago? On the whole, when people sit back and think about that, the answer is no. And whereas you talked about this riding being a safe NDP riding for many years, for the past 3 years, you have both an MLA who was from this area that was NDP and the government. And if you look at how the neighborhood has changed just in the last 3 years, you can't sit and tell me that it's a much better riding than it was 3 years ago. It's not.
Why not? Tell me more about that.
Well, look at it. I mean, you're seeing where there is businesses that are closing, the affordability of the housing. You have the Lower East Side has not gotten any better. It's not COVID that has caused Strathcona Park. You know, the economy has taken a dip. Like I said, I've worked in recruiting for 15 years, and you're seeing that previous to COVID, you still saw a little dip in the economy. And that wasn't everything that you're seeing right now is not COVID related. We can't just lay everything at COVID's feet. The economy was slowing down previous to that. The neighborhood was being neglected previous to that. If we're talking about the Lower East Side, it was being neglected previous to that. So, you know, just in terms of that area alone, there's an increase of people living on the street over the past 3 years. There's an influx of individuals who don't have the care that they need. I mean, when we're talking about mental health and drug addiction, the Lower East Side is showing that they do not have those services. And even when you speak to the people who are offering these services in a charitable way, there's so many foundations and organizations down there that are trying to keep up with the need, and they're overwhelmed. So, you know, 3 years ago, it's not any better now than it was 3 years ago under NDP, MLA, and NDP government.
Last question for you is just, you know, what is it like having to do an election during a global pandemic? were you surprised when they called the election?
I think everybody was surprised. I don't think anybody outside of the NDP was not surprised that this election was called. BC Elections is turning on a dime. They're doing a phenomenal job trying to keep everyone's safety at the polls and the advance voting. And there's no playbook for it, right? So everything you're doing is you're writing a new page every time you go along.
Well, thank you so much for your time, George. I hope people get out to vote on Saturday or in advance polls.
David, thank you for your time. I really do appreciate it. And I hope that if anyone had any questions, you know, I am really accessible. My email works. It's george.vasilis@bcliberals.com.
And that was George Vasilis. He is the candidate for the BC Liberal Party in Vancouver, Mount Pleasant, which includes Mount Pleasant and the downtown east side. He's running against the incumbent MLA, Melanie Mark, for the NDP, and the Green Party's Kelly Tatham. Voting closes in advance polls on Wednesday, every day until then, or Saturday the 24th for Election Day. More information at elections.bc.ca.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.